M47. The question of evil as seen from the four levels of science. Number 1A.
Well, I could also say, bear with me the burden of discovery. So, if things are not crystal clear right at the first go, this is an enormous comfort for me. Because I think if it would be clear for you in 1 hour, then I would think I really am a dumbbell. It took me more than 1 hour. But we know that even if we touch the faintest gleam of an idea, we touch the infinite one. And therefore, the least gleam we get of this wonderful chart is touching the whole power of development which lies within the infinite one. And so we can be quite sure that it will never leave us again, that it will unfold and unfold and unfold. Now, again, that first column. Let's look at it from the point of view how it deals with the question of evil. This is quite illuminating to see what these four levels are here for. When we are staying on the level of consciousness of science itself, then it is that level where we are not in the least concerned with evil, where the question of evil does not enter. See, that's the level. For instance, Mrs. Eddy would say, in the order of science, I take that as science itself, in the order of science, all is one grand concord. All is one grand concord. So the question of discord doesn't enter. We are not concerned with it at all. Or she would say, science knows no lapse nor from nor return to harmony, but holds the divine order or spiritual law in which God and man and all that he creates are perfect and eternal, to have remained unchanged in its eternal history. Can you see? Evil just doesn't enter. The question of evil just doesn't enter. Not only that, it's even more than that. It's the admission that in the order of science there is concord. In the order of science, there is no possibility of falling away nor returning to harmony. It is just harmony. It is just remaining unchanged in the eternal history. So on the level of science itself, the question of evil just doesn't enter. That isn't a neutral sense, but the positive sense, because positively we are conscious of the eternal concord of this principle. When we come to divine science, then the question of evil is dealt with a bit differently. In divine science, which is divine, where we have the sense of oneness, the oneness of good, the allness of good, we had as a main tone oneness. Therefore, in the oneness, when we say it is oneness, it means that there is nothing besides it. I begin to see the nothingness of something beside it. Just that. So it begins already to tackle the question of evil. It begins to tackle it as saying, because there is oneness, therefore any supposition of evil must be nothingness. Because good is oneness and allness, therefore one can't help but deducing intelligently that evil must be nothing. Has no place, no power, no person, nothing like that. That because in divine science there is oneness of spiritual being, matter must be excluded. It says, divine science excludes matter. See, it already deals with matter, but on a very high sense, as saying, you are not existing. You are not in my realm, you don't exist, you are nothing. It excludes the possibility of something opposite. Therefore, here we have the oneness of being. Therefore, we have in divine science, which shows the nothingness of mortal existence. So here we have, so to say, the somethingness of divine science and the nothingness of evil. The somethingness of good or positive of the true and the nothingness of any suppositional opposite. The plagues are forever destroyed. Forever destroyed in divine science. It is that sense of which the world does not know anything. If we look at it now from the opposite side, from the side of the world and the flesh, we can say the world doesn't know anything about divine science. Jesus was at work in divine science. His words and works were unknown to the world. Can you see that divine science already begins to handle the question of evil as a suggestion, and defines it always as unknown, forever destroyed, nothing, unreal. As far as that. Then we come to absolute Christian science. And when we come to absolute Christian science, then we have, as we have seen, to see the relationship to humanity. And absolute Christian science handles the possibility that there can be evil. It handles the essence of evil. It handles, so to say, the possibility that there could be evil, that there can be evil, that evil can have power, that evil can have life, that it can have authority, that it can have development, that it can hurt, that it can destroy, all the suggestions that it could, that there could exist something besides the infinite calculus of ideas. You remember what we had positively on the level of absolute Christian science. We had the calculus of ideas. Negatively seen now, this handles the possibility that there are miscalculations. If you calculate, you always know we have to be very careful not to miscalculate. Can you see? Therefore, it handles the supposititious error, the supposititious belief that there can be a misunderstanding, a misrepresentation, misinterpretation, that there can be a belief. So absolute Christian science handles evil really at its root, namely at the source of evil, namely at the possibility that there can exist something besides good. Mr. Dawley says that absolute Christian science handles the essence of evil. The essence of evil, namely animal magnetism. You know, this is quite clear. From the positive point of view, we had absolute Christian science as the infinite calculations. Well, what is it in mathematics when we have calculations? In mathematics, we have calculations, and there is always the lingering, latent sense, be careful, be careful, be careful, that you stick to your true calculation or everything goes wrong. You see? Everything goes wrong. Therefore, it takes in the latent possibility that something could go wrong. And that's absolute Christian science. It's the latent error, the possibility of error. It's what the Bible, what the Bible calls the right foot of the angel in Revelation with its dominant power upon the sea. See, the sea, it has no form. It's latent. It's a form for latent error. It is an error which has not taken form, but it's still there. It's therefore error that has not yet manifested itself as visible error or audible sin. It's really the pith of evil and the pith of error, the source of all visible error and audible sin that is handled here. It's the latent error. It's that error which is what we would call perhaps unconscious error, subconscious error, which we can call collective beliefs, universal beliefs, cosmic beliefs, mythological beliefs, magic beliefs, of which we are not consciously conscious.
Could it be that she said about handling the concept of sin before the human concept of sin?
Yes, exactly, yes. That man is not the originator of sin, but that sin, since the sinner, as John Morgan would say, see, that sin existed before the human concept of sin existed. That's latent error, you see. Sin, disease, death, envy, hate, revenge, all that existed before our ancestors were running on the trees around. They existed among the plants, among the fishes, everywhere. There were also disease, you see. So man has not invented disease, sin and sickness and death and lack and disharmony and greed and envy and hate and all that. That's not an invention of man. It's a latent error, a latent possibility. It's that possibility that if I don't calculate properly what is 5 times 5, but then something goes wrong. That belief is handled by absolute Christian science. Therefore, it is in psychology perhaps symbolized by an iceberg. You say an iceberg in the sea. Only a little part, 1/10, stands out and is seen, and the danger is hidden, unseen, in the sea. 9/10 is not seen, and it's that 9/10 in the human consciousness which is the great danger. That unconscious belief in collective beliefs, the collective belief that everyone can have an accident, the collective belief that everyone can get sick or become sick, that everybody must die, all those collective and universal beliefs that there can be a catastrophe, that we don't know the future, that tomorrow can bring something very terrific, an accident, a crisis, and so on. All these are beliefs that are universal, collective beliefs about a nation, collective belief about a race, about a religion, and so on. All these are the latent errors. And these need to be handled. And these are the beliefs Christian scientists don't handle. And that's the danger. Christian scientists like to handle error when they feel it, but not before they feel it. So, absolute Christian science, you see, therefore that right foot, not left foot, the dominant power, should really be exercised over the belief in miscalculation, over the belief that there is a material calculus instead of a divine infinite calculus. It handles subconscious beliefs. You know that each one of us, and that especially psychology has brought it out, that something which is lingering in the subconscious, of which we are not conscious, can suddenly break out, come into the conscious, and strike. But then it's usually too late. Anyway, it's rather late. And these subconscious beliefs, psychology shows also, are not just subconscious beliefs which have to do with our individuality, say with our birth or prenatal condition, with our first years, with an experience in our youth or with education in our youth or so, but that the subconscious beliefs are mostly, far and wide, mostly mythological beliefs, magic beliefs, mystical beliefs. That's why through all the dreams, the waking and the sleeping dreams, through thousands of years go the same symbols of evil. That in each nation, whatever the race is, whatever the religion is, whatever the standard of civilization is, the same beliefs linger consciously or unconsciously and come up in dreams or in life suddenly as forms of evil. And absolute Christian science is that level which handles that latent error. Therefore, you see, if we have those wonderful winter nights where we contemplate the Infinite One, including within himself the infinite ideas, absolute Christian science, and are not interested at all once a while for a few hours a day about our present visible error, but compute those wonderful relationships which exist between all the synonymous terms, and which exists between the synonymous terms and its ideas, and so the relationship which exists between ideas and ideas, you handle the main problem of humanity and of mortality, latent belief. Those hours are very practical. Those hours are most necessary. They handle much more than just a few visible errors. You forestall the breaking out of error. That's absolute Christian science. If we compute in mathematics rightly, we forestall the possibility that there is a false solution. Isn't it so? See, therefore, absolute Christian science is that two-edged sword, so to say, which says, in the measure as I calculate rightly, I do two things. I bring out a right solution and I kill latent error. I forestall error to have a chance to use me as a channel to break out. Therefore, let's be aware, you see, because the argument will be that if we don't use Christian Science and hammer with those ideas on any visible problem, that we are just living up in the clouds. We are not. We are, in absolute Christian Science, having our right foot right on the sea. Right down, not up in the clouds. Then we really do the big job. Then we forestall what Mr. Dawley says when he defined absolute Christian Science, life in matter, animal magnetism, the belief of life in matter. So that's absolute Christian Science. Perhaps I have diverted a little bit. Let's get the thread again. We said, how do these levels handle evil? On the stage of science itself, it says, science does not know evil at all. It knows itself as harmony. Divine science says, because there is one harmony, and that harmony is all-inclusive, therefore, the possibility and the belief of evil is excluded, must be nothing. Divine science excludes matter. It's excluded. It does not belong to that realm of being. But it lingers somewhere in the Hume, because divine science reduces to Christian Science is reduced to human apprehension. It lingers somewhere still in our consciousness, the possibility that there is just the same somewhere an evil that is existing. And so I can do nothing else but in absolute Christian Science to see now I become conscious of the infinite relationship which exists between the facts of being, between the synonymous terms, between the ideas. And in becoming conscious of that, I handle at the same time latent error, the possibility of error to spring into action. Then I go further to the state of Christian Science, and Christian Science is the left foot. See, it's a secondary power. Most Christian Science take Christian Science as the primary and only level, but Mrs. Eddy says it is a secondary power. Namely, it handles visible error and audible sin. It comes in then when we have missed handling error through absolute Christian Science. When we have let error into our consciousness and let it manifest itself as lack, as hate, as jealousy, as disharmony, as disruption, as anything that is evil. When it has manifested itself, he says he calls it as audible sin and visible error. Then Christian Science, the level of Christian Science, comes into action. Then it is that point where we have to destroy with this science the manifestation, the material manifestation of the carnal mind, the effects of carnal mind. See, absolute Christian Science handles the cause, the source of error, and Christian Science handles the effect of error. error made manifest in body, in matter, visible error, and so on. So here we see very clearly how Christian Science is that which determines the relationship between truth and error, between mind and mortal mind, spirit and the flesh, soul and the sense testimony, principle and personal sense, life and lack, the relationship between truth and false consciousness, between love and hate and the jealousy and so on, those opposites. There comes in the level of Christian Science. By analyzing what is the trouble, uncovering that trouble really is nothing, and therefore annihilating it. Can you see again that Christian Science really does that? That Christian Science lifts up the whole level again to absolute Christian Science and divine science, because it says, I analyze the error. That's the relationship between truth and error on the level of Christian Science. Then uncovers it. Uncovers what? What can it uncover? That such a belief cannot exist, cannot have reality. That's absolute Christian Science. And annihilates it, which is divine science, because divine science says error is nothing. So in a way, Christian Science again encompasses then, in the way of destroying error, all the other levels of science. It's a constant descending from principle down to the level of Christian Science, and an ascending of understanding to the level of science itself. There is not just that way of descending which I have shown, but once thought has descended to the point of where it is, evil is made flesh, then our understanding of science can prove the nothingness of that error by ascending in consciousness to the level of absolute Christian Science, where we see, oh, not error is going on, ideas are going on, the cultus of ideas is going on. And rising again to the fact of divine science, where we say, and in this realm of correct ideas, there is no place for evil. Evil is excluded in divine science. So that we arrive again at science itself and we say, after all, there is only that one going on, and nothing else has ever been going on.